For the record, we did try to get Mike Rowe today. He wanted about 500 grand, so maybe maybe next year. And we appreciate the first panel stealing all of our thunder with our topic, so I asked Sarah to come back up so she can share more about what she's doing with Women in HVACR. So I'm going to let these ladies introduce themselves real quick.
My name's Kate Sinimo, and I'm the executive director of a nonprofit called Explore the Trades. And our mission is to bridge the technical talent gap to plumbing, HVAC, and electrical. And simply said, we have the privilege of sharing the trades right at the starting line with the younger generation.
My name is Sarah Angus. I'm the director of construction for the U.S. licensed store business for Starbucks. I'm also a professor at the University of Washington in the construction management program. So, and I've been there for 22 years. and I worked for big contractors before I went to Starbucks 4 years ago. So.
And I'm Sarah with Women in HVACR, and it's the nonprofit. And I'm going to talk to you guys about it, about the ambassadorship programs, about the mentorship, and about the scholarship opportunities, and as well as membership.
Great. And so we heard the stat, less than 10% of folks in the trade are female. But yet up on this panel, there's only one male. So we're making progress. And also, I got to give the first Sarah credit. Sarah flew in from Seattle this morning and is flying right back to Seattle after this session. So thank you for being here today. But that just shows you how important it is to talk about this deficit we have out there, right? You heard Mike Rowe talk about it. We have a huge problem on our hands. The labor shortage in the trades is not going away. I think it's the next pandemic. But what the three of you are doing, I think, is remarkable, and I would love for each of you to tell your story. I think, Sarah, from Starbucks, if you could just start, because you're not just doing your job for Starbucks, you're also teaching those that want to learn more about the trades. Tell us more about what you're seeing as a professor.
Yeah, sure. So I started teaching at the UW in 2001, so a long time ago. I was usually the only woman in the room, and so I taught a lot of male students for a long time. We didn't actually have girls in the program until 2005. I mean, literally no women in the program. I think, you know, what UW is doing is really reaching out to the high schools and to even middle schools and elementary schools to start saying, hey, you know, construction management and the degree of construction management, like, does anybody know that that's a degree that exists? It's not even known that you can go into the discipline of construction management. Everybody knows architecture. They know civil engineering. They know mechanical engineering. They know those types of things. They don't know that actually there are degrees, PhDs in construction management, right? I teach in the master's program there. So like there's a lot of educational opportunities if that's the route that you want to go. So I think, you know, as just getting women and minorities to understand, and men, of course, too, that opportunity is there. It's huge. The program itself has grown. So again, when I started the undergraduate program, we had 30 to 35 students. We're at 90 now as undergrads, right? So it's growing. It's a very viable career, right? So making sure that people even know that it exists. Kids start out, I'm paying entry-level kids 95 grand coming out of school. I mean, it's not, and there's not enough of them. So even at the college level, right, it's still an underrepresented degree. We need more kids.
For sure. And we've worked with a lot of camps, both locally and nationally, mentoring young women in construction. Talk about 13-year-olds to 19-year-old females that have no idea what's out there. And we did the Philly chapter the last 2 years. It's great as we got to team up with some of our customers and had them tour facilities. We toured Ann Taylor. We toured Five Below's corporate office. We walked them through an actual construction site. And to see these young ladies realize, like, wow, I can do this. And you mentioned about the salaries. This girl had to be 15 in one of our keynotes for, I think it was Five Below. She raises her hand. She's like, yeah, what can I answer for you? She says, how much do you make? Like, when they realize what that is, it's a lot. And by the way, different markets, like college education is not affordable. Whereas with trade school, it is. We visited the Williamson College of Trade in Media, PA, right before Christmas, 3-year degree, hardly anything out of pocket. You're on campus, you're learning the core trades. By the way, you've got to be outside every day at 7 a.m. for inspection. Like, it's legit. But they're offering 6-figure salaries to these kids at 20 years old. So we just got to raise the awareness. And Kate, I think you're doing a great job with that. So maybe tell us a little bit about your organization. Yeah,
thank you. Well, first of all, I want to thank Amy for showcasing the posters we have, which is, are in front of the room. And these posters, like I said, a lot of the work that we do is really focused on sort of the beginning stages, right? So we're looking at K through 12. We're not talking to people already in college. We're not talking to people in four-year college. We're setting the stage for those people, for those students who don't even know that being a plumber, HVAC tech, or an electrician is a thing. And a lot of the work that we do is really setting the stage. So we have to explain, what does a plumber do? They don't clean toilets, but this is what they do. You know, really teaching these people and educating the educators to say, you know, we are the frontline people who serve our country are the difference between a first world country and a third world country. And I don't think people realize that. So a lot of what we do, you know, we're partnering with the National School Counselor Association. And through conversations we've had with them, we've had multiple people come up to us and say, I know that my students would be perfect for these trades, but I don't know how to get started, so we don't talk about it. And you think, wow, there's such a huge gap for them, right? For the educators who are supposed to be presenting all of these different options. So a lot of the work we do is to really explain what is an apprenticeship, because there's so many people that don't know what that is. And Darren sort of referenced it in the earlier session of, you know, changing that perception. And I think parents are sort of the toughest crowd to get through to. So a lot of the content we have is delivered digitally and explaining to the teachers, you know, if you look at the trades through the STEM lens, and we know that it's science, technology, engineering, and math, and if we can look at the trades through that lens, there's your STEM career. So that's one way that we're getting into the schools as well.
And how many schools are you touching right now?
Yeah. So based on the poster initiative that we have, so we are in over 1,500 school districts throughout the country. So there's a lot more to go, but at least we're making the dent to say, hey, if you don't know, here's one place to start. And you're showcasing the benefits, the wages, all of the things that you can do. And also, here's how the stuff that you're learning in school today directly impacts what these trades do. So here's how we can apply chemistry. Here's how we can apply PE and communication, and really ensuring that people can connect the dots.
1,500 schools, that's awesome. And Sarah, tell us more about the Women in HVAC that you were elaborating on earlier.
One of my biggest passions for the organization is that we were able to create a scholarship. So we started doing scholarships to women out there who were going to go into the field of HVAC. We're a nonprofit. We started with $500 scholarships. I came into the scholarship committee, and we were able to up it to $2,000, and we were super excited. We got in 38 applications, and we were only able to give out $2,000 scholarships to four people, right? Because what are we trying to do? Raise funds. So we, going through that process, we are now, last year, we were able to give out six $5,000 scholarships to women, and we created an endowment last year. We as an organization ended up donating $50,000 to the endowment, and we got it matched by a sponsor and a donor at our conference, our annual conference. So as of right now, because we just started it, we just launched it last year in November. As of right now, we have $180,000 in the endowment so we can continue to give out scholarships to females. You're looking at 38 applications, 38 women interested in going, and 38 women asking for funds to be able to go to college and get awareness. And these are all ages. We gave a scholarship to a woman who was in her 50s. Her husband started an HVAC company, and her son was going to go into it, and they were both going into the trade school to learn the trade so that they could help the husband out in the business and create more awareness and, you know, create a second generation. So there's just so much out there. We have that ambassador program that I was talking about earlier. So because we are virtual, we're not stationed in any place. We have women all over. We're over 1,000 memberships in our Facebook page. We have over 8,000 people that come to our page, mostly women that are saying, I'm looking for a job in this industry. Can you lead me? This is where I'm moving to. I'm relocating. There's just so much opportunity. But specifically through the ambassador program, you could sign up, become a member. It's only $149 for the year, and I know we need to increase that. It's only $149 for the year, but you can sign up to become an ambassador. We create the PowerPoint. We create the information. It's mostly geared to women. I mean, we, you know, support men too, but mostly geared to women. And you can go into the schools, into colleges, into the younger, you know, younger years, and go and talk to the females about the great opportunities in manufacturing, distributorship, you know, even the marketing side. There's just so much available to them as just opposed to being technical as a technician. I have a master plumber in my company and she's a female, and I'm super proud of that. And I've hired women that are electrician, master electricians, and we're trying to get an HVAC person to come in. But the ability for women to come into this industry is huge, but we do need more awareness, and we need people like you who have the availability and who have are in front of these different schools to be vocal and be part of us.
It's incredible. Last night, our keynote said social media, all these great comments, but the one was another empty kitchen. What's your advice for the female that just has no confidence to show up and actually do the job that they absolutely can do being a female?
I'll take it real quick. When my father decided to make me president of the business, I've been doing finances for the business since 97 with my mom. And then in 2008, I came in full time right around the recession because my dad was going to close it. And he said, Mija, I'm going to close it. What are we going to do? I said, let me go look. Let me see what I can do to help save the company. So we were able to grow it, add in the two other businesses. And then in 2012, I became president. Well, there was a gentleman that was around my dad, and he said, yeah, I'm giving it to my daughter. The gentleman said to him, to her? Oh, it's going to fail. Why would you give it to a woman in front of me? Then when I took over the presidency in 2012, a lot of my technicians went into warehouses and where they would pick up equipment. And they would be made fun of. And I'm in a Hispanic mostly area, right? And so they would talk to them and they would make fun of them. And they would say, trabajas para una vieja, which means you're working for a woman, really? And they would talk down to my technicians. Or they would tell people, you don't want to go work in there because there's a woman in charge. Like, a skirt, really? In this industry? How shame on you. So I went through a lot. That's just one thing that I've gone through as a business owner, as a female. But, you know, you just have to chalk it up and, you know, have, you know, wear your head high and just be excited to know that no matter what it is out there, that you can do it too. And just share that knowledge and that information and be the leader. It's like she said, you don't know that a woman can do it unless you see another woman doing it. Social media is super important. If you're in a position, leading the positions that you have, roles that you do, share it on social media so that other women can do it. One last thing, and I'm going to shut up. There was a plumber, because I go to the different technical schools, and there was a young lady, and she wanted to become a plumber. And I was like, great, you want to come into plumbing? I have a master plumber, you know, on our field. She can help you and train you. She's like, oh, no. I'm going to go where they give $600,000 a year when you start in plumbing. And I said, how much? I was like, I'm in the wrong field. And she's like, $600,000 a year. That's why I'm studying plumbing. She was like, you know, she was a high school student. She was in junior high. She had already investigated and she knew that she was going to come out with a plumbing trade. And she was going to go get that paying job of $600,000 a year.
Wow. Huge.
That is huge. Sorry, buddy.
I get that. It's job. Underwater plumbing.
I would say mentorship is also a huge component to for especially young women. I think you know, at the high school level, at the college level, and then even in early in career, I think my experience starting out in construction, I was always the only female on a job site. I never ever saw, and I was on big, you know, I built the Four Seasons, those types of big projects, right? I think, you know, women need to be advocates for women. And that's a huge problem as well. I think we need to advocate for each other. My team now at Starbucks is more than 50% women. Why? Because I hire women. Because I advocate for women and I advocate for minorities. Because there's capable talent out there. It's just you have to find the right place and the right mentor to take you through.
So Kate, you're not just targeting women, you're targeting everybody, but at a much younger age. What's the reaction to the kindergartner that hears about being a plumber?
So kind of going back to the posters that we have, obviously the majority of the people requesting them are in a high school setting. However, we're seeing it trend younger to middle school and then elementary. And I work with a number of contractors around the country, and a lot of it is, oh, it's career day, so mom and dad are going to come in. And one of the biggest things I would say into, you know, making students aware of the trades in general is you have to show them, you have to bring the tools, you have to bring your truck, you have to help them connect the dots of, well, when I do this, the light turns on. So really showing sort of hands-on what they can do, and really that partnership between school and industry is key, because the schools don't know, so we have to tell them. So we have to be the advocate for that. Related to the elementary kids, if you have the opportunity to do that, they get a kick out of you bringing the big tools, like the big tools and the snake camera. And if you can put, you know, something funny at the end of the pipe to look at through the snake camera, that's really cool. You know, so it's just, hey, did you know that when there's something in the sink, this is what a plumber uses to see what's going on? So it's really making it tangible so that it sticks with them. And then they start to key into, oh, so I know when I turn the water on, you know, there's some math and all the pipes that go into that. So really breaking it down, and, you know, it's helpful for the parents too. So
I ask because past summer, I was watching the news and I saw a gentleman named Evan Jarrett from the Philly area who started a mobile trade school during the pandemic. He bought an RV and he was traveling across the greater Philadelphia area teaching middle schoolers the trades. And I immediately sent a note to Amy and Eric. I said, we got to get him and talk to him. So we talked to him, and this guy's great. He's doing it all his own time, but he realizes the importance, and he's in some of the tougher parts of Philadelphia teaching these children the importance. So we actually brought him to our office, and our employees got to bring their kids to the office, and we did plumbing and electrical. My 8-year-old son had a blowtorch in his hand. It was scary, but he thought it was the coolest thing ever. But these kids got to see, like, not only is it cool, but wow, now I can actually, and we installed an outlet. That works. I start electricity. Like, it's simple things like that that makes it look that much cooler. And then I think the dollars will last, right? Because income's not on the mind of a third grader. It's like, I wanted to make a difference. And the guys who stole our thunder in the last session, you know, career day back in the day, dad showed up with the tool belt. And for some reason, that perception is gone. Look, we all have our careers, which are super important. But without these trades, the Bellagio wouldn't be here. Those fountains would not be working. Like, and that's what we told the Mywood girls. Like, you're saving lives. If you're an HVAC and you work for a hospital, you've got to get out there right away when there's no cooling. You've got to get that generator installed so that it doesn't go down, right? And so when you really instill that kind of message to the kids, they realize this isn't like just Penco Tech, right? Our local trade school. This is making a difference. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Joe mentioned it about your daughter, right? And kind of understanding the situation of a clothing manufacturer, and I'm not going to buy from them anymore. And I was just reading an article the other day about Gen Z, and I think students are really savvy and they know what's going on. And I think one message that we can use in this industry is the climate, and you can make a difference in the world. And I think Gen Z is really focused on that sustainability piece. And I think it's one way for us to tie into, hey, that device in your hand is saving energy, it's saving money. It's really on that conservation piece. So I think that's just another application we can use.
Now, we heard on the video, I could hire 6 to 8 plumbers today, but they're not out there. So that's part of the problem. But Sarah, I'm going to put you on the spot. When we spoke before the holidays, you made a comment that really stuck out to me. You said that you are now forced to, well, I'll let you go ahead and tell the story.
So because of the lack of skilled trades, we're having to change our designs in order to meet the skills that are in the field. So simplifying the designs. So when you see, and you know, Starbucks, we're very protective of our brand, and we build beautiful stores, but we have to be mindful of what we're actually designing in order to make sure that we can actually execute and that it will be able to stand the test of time, right? We renovate every 5 years, so it's not as if, you know, it needs to stay there forever, but nonetheless, it needs to be up for more than 6 months before it's falling off. And so we are mindful of what we're designing in order to make sure that we can actually execute in the field. And so it's not just HVAC and electricians, it's tile setters, it's carpentry, it's carpenters, it's, you know, it's all inclusive, right? And so so it's making sure that we have those skilled trades, because even just for, you know, a little 1200 square foot Starbucks, if I can't find skilled labor, I mean, oh my goodness, we are in, and it's now. And so I think some people are saying, oh, it's 8 to 10 years. No, 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 no. it's now. We have a problem now. We need skilled labor now. And we're paying a lot for it. So the opportunities are there. It's just getting the willing kids and the willing people to come in any age, getting them in to you know, have a second career, whatever it is, but getting them in to start learning.
There was just something I want to share. In Texas, I don't know about the rest of the states, right? But in Texas, because everything's great in Texas,
the
workforce. that's a low blow. You and I are going to have words after. In Texas, the Workforce Commission gives you money as an employer if you hire somebody who's going to school, and it pays for their college as well. So there's so much great opportunity as employers in different divisions that you can hire these, you can go to these colleges and say, hey, if you come and work for me while you're working for me, even if it's part-time, you start bringing them into your fields, then you have more, you know, buy-in, and they're going to end up staying with you at least through their college time, because you're paying for their college, and then whatever contract term you want to make afterwards. But you have so much great opportunity, but are you taking care of your resources, right? So it's just a matter of sitting down and looking at the different resources that are out there.
I think, again, it's the awareness factor, too. We all said that, but, like, it can't just be the four of us. It's, like, folks in this room, and I've reached out to a lot of folks on the retail side to talk to the construction folks. Like, a lot of companies are doing this. Harbor Freight, Home Depot, Lowe's. Like, what can we do to get those brands that kind of help support the cause, too, to raise the awareness out there, and then get government support? Like, imagine if Washington could spend a day talking about this next pandemic. We're creating jobs, and then, Sarah, what you're doing, like, you're also an entrepreneur, which I think is, like, a slam dunk. Not only are you learning the trades, but you're starting a company, you're building jobs, you're building a business across the country. Like, that could bring so much camaraderie, and then top it off with a female driven aspect. The sky is the limit. Yeah.
Sarah, what is your class of your, at UW, what is your class demographic look like from the 30 to the 90 plus? Male, female, what's the breakdown?
You know, every year it changes a little bit, but we're definitely seeing, I mean, I think last year we had 25 or 30. I mean, it's definitely getting a lot more women. Minorities are at least 40%. So, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, we're seeing a lot more minorities and women in the program for sure. And I think, you know, there's also a certificate programs. There's a lot of other programs that, and it's not just the UW. There's, I could speak for the Pac-12. There's tons of other programs that are very similar, and they're seeing very similar trends. So it's definitely, I mean, it's becoming known, right? But I think also the job site has changed, right? Like, I remember walking onto a job site in the mid-90s and, you know, wow, was there a women's bathroom? Only when I demanded it because OSHA said I could have one, right? where that's just not the case now, right? So it's a much more friendly environment, more friendly. It's certainly not totally friendly, but more friendly environment. I think the other thing too is having people understand that it's not just going to work for a big general contractor. And I was, you know, blind to this as well. You can come out of college and go to Starbucks. You can go to, you know, all these different QSRs with huge construction management, you know, teams. And so it's, you don't have to just go to a contractor and you're building, you know, whatever, you know, a GC would build. There's so many other career paths within you know, construction, that it's, we got to open, even within in our own programs, we have to open up the aperture of, like, there's a lot that you can do with that degree, and a lot of places that you can go.
One of our businesses needs, if you're in the trades, you need good project management. Rob's the same way, and that's, you need good project management. And there's a lot out there, but it's a great career. And our project managers do very well.
Well, and I think it's also just taking, and I'm going to call it a stigma, right? Because I was in the program too. And in a construction management program, they're so focused on, you're going to go to a big general contractor, and that's the only way that you can be, you know, really successful. And so taking that stigma away, going to a big electrical firm or a big mechanical firm, those guys make way more money than project managers at GCs, right? Or to the owner side, or, like, there's so many different other things. And so it's just taking away, like, again, it's not, it's just showing people what is available to them. And so I think we just need to do a better job of saying that's a career path and it's a really viable career path. And then also for those companies, right, for women especially, there has to be a level of flexibility, right? And I think we all need to really hear that, because there is a difference for women, right? And there has to be flexibility for everybody, but particularly I had to leave GC and start my own company when I had my first child, because there was no flexibility and I didn't have maternity leave, right? And so I had to start my own company in order to stay in, and because I didn't have flexibility at a general contractor, right? And so that's not cool. And women shouldn't have to leave, exit in order to have a family, right? And so I think that also needs to be taken into consideration.
Talking about those flexible hours, you know, just in my team, in my experience, the women are the ones that are running my office and they're telling me, okay, I have to leave at this certain time, or can I leave at 3 and can I work from home for the last 2 hours after I pick up my kids from school? Like just little things like that, that you have to be able to address and change immediately so that you don't lose great workforce. Because at the end of the day, it's usually the female that ends up having to work with those constraints.
Yeah, if you're, go ahead.
You mentioned a couple of things too. So obviously, women in the workforce is one of them. Also, you mentioned a little bit about early on about the actual skill sets themselves of women.
Yes.
So we heard earlier that it takes 10,000 hours to be professional, proficient at something. Why is there such a drop off then? Like, is the education not there, or are they not getting enough hands on experience? Like, the apprenticeship we've kind of talked about, where's the
I believe it's that we just don't have the apprenticeship and we don't have the mentorship at the base level. They're getting warm bodies, right? Like anybody who's willing, saying, yes, come in. They're new people on the job and they're not getting the right training in order to be able to execute at the level that companies want them to execute. They will get there, but because we're in this trade gap right now, it's anybody that's willing, I'll take you, right? And so those people will grow. But we need a pipeline to continue to grow that, right? Because there's such a huge gap right now, we're going to feel it for a while.
I also want to just touch base that on family dynamics has changed. Before, you would grow up with your father at home and he would be showing you some of the trades. And so you were getting those, you know, $10,000 hours during that time as you're growing up. So by the time you're 12, my brother, by the time he was 12, knew how to wire a whole house. Right? But why? Because he was working along the trades. Now, because you're working so hard in those trades, you want your children to do so much more than you. What are you not doing? You're not showing them the trades. There's differences in relationships now, split homes. So the children are not growing up with those hours of viable skills that they learn from home. And so they're not going into the apprenticeship programs. And that's where some of the loss is coming from.
Yeah, I think what Sarah just said about being exposed to it, because I think all of us in the room probably went to high school and had shop class and auto body, and we had all that stuff. And then, you know, with the college for everybody mentality and school budgets are tight. So what's the first thing to go? You take all of those classes out with the equipment and the instructors. And now if you don't see them at home, you're not going to see it at school. So now we have such a deficit and sort of a lost generation of tradespeople who could be here now, and they don't know. And so now it's like we're starting back at square one with just basic information.
One other thing real quick. When I was growing up, my dad would tell me, I would see them come home. They were all dirty and sweaty, right? And I was like, I want to go with you. What did you do today? Like, I was so excited. Like, I was at home. You know, I didn't want to wash dishes, you know, and cook. And so I was like 9 and my dad would say, you know, you can't go with me. And I'd get up in the morning, I'd get dressed in jeans and, you know, I'd be ready. And I'd be like, I want to go learn what, you know, my little Roy's doing. I want to know what he's, you know, how did he wire that house? And my dad would tell me, this is not a place for you. Stay at home with your mom. And now I look at him and I'm like, look at me now, Dad. Look at me now.
I do the same thing. But to piggyback off that, because we're talking about the core trades, Dad bought me a lawnmower at 11 years old for my birthday. He said, you're going to cut lawns, and that's how you're going to pay for your first car. And I had 25 lawns at one time. So the skilled trades are great, but we do a lot of janitorial, hard surface floor cleaning. That trade is diminishing. To get up, to go overnight, to get locked into a store and be told you can't have a cigarette, and you strip a floor for pennies on the dollar, it's not happening. It's a family generation business. It's lacking. So while these are great, we still have to maintain the floors. And think about it. Through COVID, what was the number one priority? Cleanliness. But yet cleaning is like looked as the most awful trade to be in, and it should be reputable. So when you look at it from that perspective, this is a much more bigger problem that we've got to get in front of. And I think from your perspective, like, what can this audience, because we're all either directly or indirectly tied to some type of facility, right? What can these folks do to help us promote the awareness?
You know, the first thing that I would say is probably the most important is really that industry and education relationship. If school isn't going to provide it, then we will. And I know it's frustrating when you call the counseling office and they say, oh, what do you do? You know, would love to come in. And then you tell them and they say, oh, no, never mind. And I think to get around that, I think you're either going to the tech ed teacher, you're going to someone directly who can get that set up. And whether it's bringing the students out to the shop or the company and really show them what you do, I think that's the most important thing that we can do is really that show and tell from the industry perspective.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say y'all have employees too. So get your employees to start sharing. It's not just you, it's all of the people that work for you. My team, if they have career fairs that they can go to, if they have school talks that they can go to, because most people have kids, anything to get into their community to represent like what construction could be and what kind of careers there are, like encourage your people to do that. I would say, I mean, I think before I went to Starbucks, my kids were like, oh, she's in construction, it's so boring. But now that I'm at Starbucks, she's like, oh my God, she works for Starbucks. So it's so cool, right? And so like if you have that kind of cachet, that it does suck the kids in. I go to career fairs at my kids' school and they're like, oh my gosh, can you get me free Starbucks? I'm like, no, but I can tell you about construction and look at all these cool things that we get to do and all these cool buildings that we get to build. And we're all over the world and all these amazing things. And you can do construction, you can do design, you can do real estate management. There's all these different things just within Starbucks alone, right? And that we're one company of a bazillion that do the same types of things. That's, you got to get them, right? And you got to pull them in. So yeah, it's grassroots. It's getting to those kids and then also in your home. Like my husband and I argue over this. My kids, I don't care if they go to college. I'm encouraging that. Like, and you have to live that mission. If I'm going to be telling people it college isn't a thing or doesn't need to be a thing, I got to live that too. My kids, I want them to be electricians or elevator technicians or crane operators or something else that will give them flexibility and make lots of really good money without debt that mom has to pay for. So you got to live what you say.
I would encourage you guys working for larger companies, right? These huge corporate people. You have marketing groups or committees or whatever that you guys go to. Ask them to change the way they market. Market and showcase your janitorial people, your electricians as heroes, because at the end of the day, they are. In the pandemic, when everything was shut down, HVAC, electricians, and plumbing, we were not shut down. We had to continue to go into these places and into these homes to do repairs. They were the real heroes. When we had the freeze in Texas, we had the freeze in Texas for those 2 weeks. Some of my technicians had no water or no light, no power in their house for a week. And they were still out there in people's homes trying to get them up and running. Those are the heroes. What are you doing with your marketing? Are you showcasing the heroes within your own industry and your own company and blessing them with the acknowledgement of they're doing a great job? Or do we just pass them by and not know their name while they're cleaning the floors or repairing the lights? Like, what is your input as these huge corporations giving back to your community that are the heroes?
That's a phenomenal point. You think about Hurricane Ian, like what took place down there. Every retailer in this room was affected, right? Ron, you had 50 stores that you didn't know were going to be there in 3 days. Showing the younger generations that they can go down there and volunteer and clean up and realize that they can actually rebuild after a disaster. Like, how does that not motivate you? But you've got to work with your teams to make sure you can promote that, which we do a lot of that, right? Because we want to make sure, I've got two boys and a girl. The girl will be an HVAC contractor one day. I can assure you the boys will be in juvenile by 5 years. But I continue to joke, like, you know, we love to go to the Jersey Shore. Bob and Joe's HVAC. You get a call on a Saturday, it's hot in the house, you're rolling a truck. And you can have your friends do it with you. Like, it's just the awareness of what you can do to make an impact. And then Sarah, you made a really good point. it's not just trades, but like real estate. I was blown away by the real estate industry and what retailers and real estate have to do. You're responsible for the next moneymaker, right? To go out here and made ICSC and be around like high powered executives and sign leases with big organizations, you can drive growth to a Starbucks. But no one knows about that in grade school or high school. And then they get to college and it's like, yeah, let me be an accountant. No, nothing wrong with that. But there's so much that they can learn about the different things out there that there's just no awareness on.
You know, the janitorial area, we see this all the time. It just happened to us at our airport in Fort Myers. That airport's been maintained by the same company for 10 years. And I say this because government needs to step in and do something about this, because government's causing a lot of the pressure, downward pressure on wages. So they'll take that same job that's been there for 10 years. And I went in, and we weren't using the airport much. I noticed that it wasn't as clean as it was before. And then I realized it wasn't the same people. They had different uniforms. It was different people there. Well, who got affected by that? The janitor who was doing that job lost their job. It's gone. Somebody new came in and took it for a lesser amount, whether it be that they're here as a immigration or whatever the case might be. The lowest level in society pays for when government goes and puts it out to bid and compresses the price. And they tell you, oh, don't compress the price on labor. We want you to compress it somewhere else. But they give you a set of contracts. They always give you. It's government needs to stop doing that, because they're hurting the very people they're telling you they want to protect, and they're not. Those people were there 10 years. I mean, I flew in and out of that airport sometimes twice a month, and you get to recognize who's there. And we have a problem where, how can we get outbidded on stuff that 20 years ago, that wasn't the price? And you know the work's not getting done. They're cutting corners. They're not good. I've coined the phrase that in that business, it's not what you do in the contract, how you make money, it's what you don't. And that's what's going on in our industry. And unfortunately, people at the upper levels only want to save money. And at the end of the day, you can save money, but you can adjust the frequency, you can adjust the scope of work. But if you don't do that, the person who we all want to see grow in this country is getting impacted the worst. But that's just not.
We've got about 3 minutes left. Any other questions or comments?
Yes. I was going to say, Kate, we were talking to Carly at the airport yesterday. Have you guys been, because the grade schools are awesome, but I didn't text like 2 years ago.
Sorry, Joe.
So that's a good question. So what I would say, it kind of goes back to what I said earlier about they don't know. So we're not going to talk about it. We're just going to pretend like it doesn't exist. Where we've seen some really good success is when the school is a CTE focused school, you know, and there's a multitude. I'm thinking of one in Lubbock, Texas. They took an old Kmart, the school district did, and they made it into 12 different vocations. And I think what a fortunate community to have that, because now you have people who were in industry now teaching the class, which is, you know, a rarity, I think, in a lot of communities. So that would be, it's really the CTE schools that are more receptive to hearing that message rather than, you know, your regular public school.
They also hire our best techs, which is a challenge. But you can, yes. You don't have to solve the problem necessarily make a big impact. You know, I mean, $100,000 across a big business split up across, you know, 50 locations has a massive impact on planting seeds that are more quickly turned around and say, getting into the grade schools, which is also.
Right. Yeah. I just finished a book called Shop Class as Soul Craft. And if you haven't read it, I would encourage you to read it. But the author talks about sort of the history of how we got to where we are. And it's really interesting. And it really talks about after World War II, how the messages in society changed and how all of a sudden we're on a path to seek knowledge and not necessarily a trade. And it's a really good dichotomy of education versus hands-on work. And so it helps explain how we got here. But again, you know, it's just, we're behind the eight ball. So now it's, we're going to create our own unicorn, so to speak, as they get older.
We are. We're electrical, air conditioning, refrigeration, and plumbing. So my dad started with electrical, and then they brought in air conditioning when I took over. I brought in refrigeration 3 years later, and then I brought in plumbing 4 years later. So my viewpoint was that we have to continue to grow in all of the trades because they're very necessary. And refrigeration is hard to get technicians that are skilled. Like, it's so bad. Like, I have two technicians that know refrigeration, and they're busy 24/7, literally.
And you can't get out quick enough.
No, you can't. You can't get out quick enough, and now you can't get parts. So, I mean, it's just like a whole other, like, that's a whole other day watching the Cowboys.
And with that note, well, I want to speak on behalf of the entire folks here. Like, you guys are doing a great job, each of you, and thank you for what you're doing. And we're here to support you however we can. And Sarah, once again, thanks for making that really quick trip back and forth. Try to hit a blackjack table on your way out. But thank you very much. Thank you all.